Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about what worked for me, but also those big epic fails that I've made along the way. And all because I truly believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And before we get started, I just want to say I have done a little refresh on my website. So if you go to spencereducation.com, I have a new tab on there that I'm adding a lot of new resources to, and it's just the free resources tab. It has a bunch of stuff that you can use, practical, out-of-the-box things that you can use in your classroom. I have updated my speaking page. If you're interested in booking me for the spring, I have some availability in January, March, and April. A little bit in February, a few pieces in open dates in February as well. And then December too. So if you are interested in bringing me in at the very end of the semester, that would be great. And then a few more ways that we can connect. If you don't subscribe to my newsletter, it's basically any of my new resources, sketch videos, articles, podcasts sent out each week. I try to send it out on Thursdays. And then follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram at Spencer Education. I am on Facebook at Spencer Education. And I'm pretty much almost never on LinkedIn, but I probably should be. But anyway, let's connect. That would be great. And without further ado, let's jump into today's topic, which is all about rethinking how we use AI for writing. If we think about it this way, we keep talking about AI in schools like it's this miracle or menace, that it's a either-or mindset. And the problem is that either-or approach steers us into two different dead ends. If you've listened to this podcast, you know I talk about lock it and block it and techno-futurism. So techno-futurism is this path that hands the wheel over to the tool and mistakes novelty for real learning. It's basically saying if a machine can do it, we don't need to do it. And there's a real danger to that because we end up with something called cognitive atrophy. The other path locks everything down and keeps students from learning how to use AI wisely. So let's talk about how we can take a different approach, a third way, a blended approach. And I want to start by recognizing some of the dangers of AI. So are chatbots actually leading to, quote, brain rot? I've received a lot of instant messages and emails lately asking me what I think about the new MIT study, Your Brain on ChatGPT. And that's ultimately why I decided to write this article and record this podcast. I feel like we're seeing this binary approach that is dangerous. And like I said, it's the lock it and block it versus techno-futurism. But I also think that there's a third option, and this is the blended approach. This is a human-driven approach, but it allows for AI integration. And we can think about it as a continuum where sometimes we're AI resistant, sometimes we are AI integrated, and then sometimes we actually allow AI to drive aspects of the learning. And what I love about this blended approach is it is still human-centered, but it is nuanced. It is yes and, it is not binary. So let's think about this study for just a moment. As I think about this MIT study, it's important that we don't fall into the two traps that I just mentioned. Instead, we should take a step back and say, what does this study actually demonstrate? And what does that mean for our students? It helps to examine where we are actually getting our information regarding the study. As much as I love reading journal articles, and I promise you, I am not being sarcastic, I tend to hear about those big studies through popular journalism first. A slew of dystopian headlines pop up all around, warning us of the worst case scenarios. In this case, it's something called brain rot, which is not the scientific term. From there, social media influencers summarize the summaries of the researchers, and they simplify it even more into these short 30-second TikTok videos. And they often add a little bit of their own commentary, which sometimes can be a little bit uninformed. And I recognize the limitations of making short videos. I often make 90-second, minute-long, whatever videos that I post on Instagram. So I get it. It's not easy. For the last few weeks, I've seen so many Instagram reels offering quick summaries of the research followed by short, provocative takeaways by this influencer, whoever it may be. So we end up with these layers. At the core, we have solid, nuanced research from MIT, which is pretty good, actually pretty elite, actually the best university in terms of doing research on AI, in my opinion. Also, I think UPenn is doing some great stuff too. But in this case, the research is specifically about over-reliance on chatbots for writing. Very limited area and scope in a way that leads to passive learning. The article includes limitations, recognition of variance, and an attempt to find a contextualization of the results. And the goal here is scientific discovery. That's what they're aiming for. Is let's figure this out at a scientific level. That's what research is. But then we have layer two, and layer two is necessary, but it has a different focus. This is journalism. This is where scientific journalists then interpret these findings for a popular audience. The goal here is to explain the science in a way that is easy to understand. Journalists have to convey complex scientific research in a way that people outside that community can understand. Now, this leads to necessary oversimplification to make the research more accessible to someone like me, right? I'm not a computer scientist or a social scientist or a software engineer. I'm an educator. However, then there's this secondary motive that's a little bit different. And this is the profit motive. Look, these journalists work for media corporations, and there is a profit motive, which means writers must also craft content that stands out. It needs to be entertaining and informative at the same time. And that entertainment motive changes the writing. We need to recognize that that's a part of what's going on. Layer three happens when the headline writers use bold, binary, emotionally loaded language to grab your attention so that you click on the article. The motive here is not clarity. It's purely reach. Every news outlet has this goal. So now we're moving from being informative or being discovery driven to eyeballs, right? Clicks. It's just purely about the number. But then we have layer four, and that's what happens when social media influencers summarize the article, often just the headline, in a way that will capture your attention. The social media algorithms play up emotions like fear, surprise, anger, whatever that may be, and those rise to the top. So if someone is trying to be nuanced and even, God forbid, boring, the algorithm doesn't value that. So even if you create an Instagram reel that's nuanced, our feeds will be flooded with videos that spark all kinds of outrage and binary thinking that leads to more clicks and shares and comments, and basically a huge conversational war happening in the comment section. What ensues is a conversation about a video in response to a headline that is already removed from the research. It's talking about. That's what's happening. People become more entrenched in their positions and more polarized in their views. So we end up with deeper polarization on the AI debate. Note the term debate. I'd love for it to be a discussion, but discussions are slow. Discussions are explanatory. They're nuanced. They're not binary. Debates are. So social media rewards these binary debates. I realize that most of us don't have time to pore over a highly technical article, but I do think we can cultivate a daily habit that can help us avoid these outrage cycles. The first thing that we can do is take a different approach to the way we consume media. Jennifer Lagarde and Darren Hudgens are the authors of Developing Digital Detectives. And although this book is older, I think it is the most relevant view of information literacy. And what I love is you start with an emotional pulse check. Instead of just reading it and analyzing it, you say, what is it making me feel? And I think that's really important to recognize that emotions are a part of how people get manipulated online in terms of their beliefs. And That happens with literally all of us. I also think it's important that we start with a place of curiosity. So instead of judging this and making a snap judgment, we start with questions. For me, I immediately, when I saw the headlines, I said, how exactly were the students using it? What guardrails did they have? What aspects of the writing process were AI integrated? Who were the students? How motivated were they to write? Were the prompts in any way AI resistant? How is this similar or different from the studies of pilots and autopilots and the idea of cognitive debt that's been studied in other AI-driven or AI-saturated areas? When we respond from this place of curiosity, and I promise we're going to get to how we approach AI in writing, but we're starting with this idea of the research because I think it's really important to know what the research is actually saying. When we start with curiosity, we admit that we don't have all the answers. We create a delay in judgment that pushes us toward intellectual humility. This can then allow us to explore the nuances of the facts and examine complexity and context. Curiosity is inherently slow and it is messy, and that's what I love about it. It leads to deeper understanding. So what does this study actually say? When we approach it with curiosity and we look at nuance, the study's not exactly anti-AI. It was more about what I would have called cognitive atrophy, or as they term it, cognitive debt. Now, their studies suggest that while AI tools like ChatGPT can make writing easier, they might create this cognitive debt. I had never heard the term before, but it makes sense. Cognitive debt is essentially the cost of relying on shortcuts. Again, I think about it more like a muscle that atrophies, but this is another idea. And it creates a deficit for things like deeper understanding, memory, mental engagement. All of those things become weakened as a result, and they're paid back later through extra work or a loss of learning. That's the debt metaphor. Again, I like the atrophy metaphor a little bit better. So what happened in the study? Well, participants who used AI showed weaker brain engagement, less ownership of their work, and had even more trouble recalling what they'd written compared to those who wrote without using AI at all. In other words, the convenience of outsourcing ideas came at a cost of mental processing. Although the findings are still preliminary and limited to essay writing, the study raises some really important ideas around what we lose when we use AI as our default without being intentional. And look, this is not new. We all suck at memorizing massive chunks of text because we have 100+ years of relying on written material rather than memorizing it because of the ease of having information at our fingertips, starting with the telegraph. It's not a new phenomenon. Many of us are struggling to navigate new cities spatially because we've become reliant on things like Google Maps or Apple Maps, or if you want to be totally unhinged, using Waze. So how do we respond to these findings? Let's talk about that for a moment. One of the things that I thought about immediately is this is why we need deeper learning. We need to slow down. We need to spend a longer amount of time being intentional. We need to move out of automaticity and embrace ideas like confusion. That's an idea I talked about a lot on this podcast, deeper learning. It's the topic of my newest book, The Depth Advantage. And so that, to me, actually pointed to the need for deeper learning. If you're interested, I have a whole chapter on communication in a world of AI and what stands out in terms of communication. And to me, this was just a reminder of why students need to write in a way that's different in an age of AI, in a way that centers on context and centers on voice and interpersonal knowledge and things like that. So that's my first takeaway. It actually sort of confirms the idea that deeper learning is absolutely vital. But what else does it say? It also says we need to use AI ethically. When we don't provide guardrails, you end up in two different zones. So you end up in techno-futurism and just allowing AI to do all the work for you. And that's essentially what happened in this study. but it also points to the need for avoiding the lock it and block it approach, because where else are students going to learn how to use AI in their writing in a way that is ethical? So what does it look like to take a blended approach that is incorporating AI into aspects of that? And I think the answer is to look at the continuum of AI integration. And so I want you to imagine on the far left side, we have rejecting AI. And on the far right side, we have embracing AI. So we begin at level one with AI resistant. This is no AI tools at all. A focus is on fighting back against machine learning entirely. And there's a time and a place for this. If we want to take this level one approach, it's totally fine for us to do that. But what we need to do is think about a way to do AI resistance in a way that is human-centered. So here's what I mean. A lot of educators are feeling frustrated with AI, so they're leaning into AI-resistant approaches. They feel exhausted by students cheating and academic dishonesty. And every time I talk about this, I get a bunch of flood of comments on social media, especially Facebook, with people saying like, I'm just not gonna have students use any AI and they're just cheating all the time and things like that. And I get it. For them, the MIT article sort of confirmed their greatest fear about AI. If left on their own, kids are going to absolutely just cheat and use AI to do all the work for them. Some teachers have responded by requiring paper and pencil for writing assignments. I'm actually a fan of paper and pencil. I mean, I wrote Vintage Innovation, and a big part of that is embracing lo-fi tools. It can help with long-term memory for information retention. It can allow us to use visuals and sketchnoting techniques in writing. A handwritten approach is a great option for doing a draft if we are learning through writing. But we need to recognize that there's a cost to handwriting everything. If we are taking more of a demonstrate what you're learning in writing rather than learning through writing, then the handwriting approach just becomes laborious, rewriting drafts over and over and over again. And it is time consuming. And it is also, newsflash, not the way we are going to write when we enter the workforce. So we need to recognize it doesn't match the way we write in life. A second approach has been to lean into AI checkers. While some of these checkers claim to be 98% accurate, I have found that most of the tools are closer to 80%. And if a coin flip is 50%, I'm just not that thrilled with 80%. Just 30% higher, no thank you. But suppose we have 98% accuracy. For a high school English teacher, this could easily lead to 4 students getting away with cheating and 4 students being falsely accused, and now you have lost that relationship with your students. You've also created lawsuits, professional liability. I mean, your AI checkers to catch students cheating is incredibly dangerous. When the accusations happen, they tend to happen with certain groups. We need to recognize high-achieving students who mimic the writing styles of academic papers. They're going to get falsely accused. Students on the spectrum who tend to use more consistent verb tenses and formulaic approaches to their writing, they're going to get falsely accused. Multilingual students, English learners, they're going to be falsely accused because they tend to use verb tense formulas when they write. So the reality is that's going to lead to huge civil rights and ADA lawsuits. It's going to be a nightmare. So does that mean that we don't use AI checkers at all? Actually, I think AI checkers have a place as a diagnostic tool so that when students are writing, they use the AI checker, it gives them a score and it tells them your writing is too similar to AI. Make it stand out more. Use the AI checker to make your writing stand out. So what does this mean then? You know, where does that leave us as educators? Because AI checkers don't work. Paper and pencil has its drawbacks. I think we can design the prompts themselves to be a little bit more AI resistant. So if we're using this model of AI resistance, what it means is we can tie the writing prompts themselves into personal connections. So write about a time you faced a challenge that connects to the theme of resilience in the novel that we just read. That would be an example of personal connection, that intrapersonal knowledge. Local and community context, things that tie into your local neighborhood, your school. How does the theme of, you know, what are the themes of The Great Gatsby and how does that connect to the American dream? And how do you see that theme play out in our school, in your neighborhood, and in at least two or three current events that you've seen happening around our nation? That is much more context dependent, and AI doesn't know that, right? So just like it doesn't know each student personally, the personal connection, it doesn't know your local context. Another thing that you can do is bring in multimodal evidence. When students sketch or diagram or capture things through photos, the work becomes rooted in what they actually created. So something like take two photos and show how energy is used in everyday life around you, write a short explanation and connect it to the science concepts we found. That's much harder for AI to do. And it's much more human-centered. Conversation and interviews. Here students pull dialogue from real people. So connecting it to a Socratic seminar. Something like ask three classmates what they think the biggest challenge is in solving climate change, summarize their answers, and explain in a way where you're actually going to quote them. So any of those things are the types of writing prompts that are resistant to AI. And again, we're moving from a gotcha standpoint to a place where we're saying, let's use AI in our writing, or let's craft the writing prompts to be AI resistant. And more importantly, let's focus on a human-centered approach. Level two is AI assisted. With this approach, teachers use AI on the back end, but students are still doing most of the work themselves without using AI at all. And the goal here is this really helps with scaffolds, supports. It could be that teachers are using AI to craft those AI-resistant writing prompts I was just describing. They might use a chatbot to convert former questions into those types of prompts, or they might use AI to create images for visual writing prompts or to create infographics. Infographics. The bottom line is teachers are using it in the back end. So you might be designing graphic organizers, sentence stems, vocabulary banks. You might have exemplars that you create for students. And then as students begin to do research, you might create some AI written articles. You might use a tool like Notebook LM to synthesize multiple resources and have a podcast, you know, an AI generated podcast that students listen to. You might use AI to rewrite articles, primary sources, things like that, to change the lexile level. You might even use voice-to-text AI systems to create audio versions that students can listen to while they read. The goal here is that you are using AI to support the learners in a more traditional writing approach. So they're not using it, but you are. I think it's important that even when you use AI to write articles for you or to do sentence stems or to do, you know, any other scaffolds and supports, you cannot lead to, or you can't fall into the same trap of cognitive atrophy. And I actually found myself doing this and had to step back. I created a rubric from scratch. I actually created three different rubrics for three different courses, and I popped them in, and then I realized, oh my gosh, I didn't even change those rubrics. They were AI generated. I read them. I said, they're good. Let's go. Boom. And then I had to step back and say, okay, what do I know about my students? What do I know about the course that I'm teaching right now? And then from there, I actually took the rubrics that AI generated, and I modified them based upon what I know about my students. And the metaphor that I use is, you know, AI creates vanilla. You're going to take that vanilla base and create your own flavor of ice cream. So in this phase, we're really focused on AI enhanced, right? We're really focused on AI assisted to help with the learning. But then we move into level three, and this is AI integrated. And this is where most teachers feel a little bit more skeptical. A lot of us feel a little more nervous. But with this approach, we are going to integrate AI into the student writing process. And let's talk about what that looks like. All right, so with this approach, students use AI in a way that is transparent and ethical. I love Ethan Mollick's notion of the cyborg and the centaur here. With the centaur model, a person and the AI have like separate tasks. That's the centaur model. AI does this, I do that. But with the cyborg, you're working with the AI the entire time. So you take something AI driven or created and you modify it to make it your own. You take something that's your own and you use AI to modify it or edit it. And so what does that look like in the writing process? I think it means that when we design our AI integrated tasks, we use a continuum. So let students know, I use a color-coded system of, you know, blue is AI generated, green is AI generated but revised by you as a human, pink or magenta, not magenta, what is it? Yeah, okay, pink. I'll just say pink is the human generated but edited by an AI, and then black is something that's totally human generated. So we use like a color-coded system. A lot of people use lights, like a red, green, yellow light system. And whatever you use, it's a way to just see how things, like to be transparent. So what does that look like to be AI integrated in research? I'm going to walk you through the entire writing process and just share some ideas for AI integration. After getting the writing prompt, a student might use a chatbot to clarify instructions and look at exemplars. So using it to create exemplars that they can view. They might also use a chatbot to set up a plan for a long-term writing assignment, breaking down the tasks, having a time estimation, specific days to work on different pieces. All of those would be examples of, you know, using it in the pre-writing phase before they've ever even done the research. Before doing research, they might do a Q&A back and forth with the chatbot using the FACTS prompt engineering cycle. It's a whole thing that I have created. I actually have a free resource that you can check on it. It's pretty cool, where students can go through this prompt engineering process. And it really forces them to slow down and engage in media literacy as they do prompt engineering. But as they do research, students might generate their own questions using a set of sentence stems that the teachers created. They might do rotating reading activities. They might annotate a set of curated documents. And all of that might be created by you as a teacher at that last level of AI assisted. And they might fill out graphic organizers with questions, answers, all of that. But as a teacher, you might also have some chatbot options, like it's okay to ask clarifying questions to a chatbot, but you can't summarize the information. I want you doing that. Or you're going to engage in this research, you're going to read with it first, you're going to summarize it first, and then when you're done, you can ask questions to the AI to clarify your understanding. In this phase, you might have students using note cards, sketch notes, they might do Socratic seminars, small group activities. Again, we're not using AI to drive the learning here, right? It's very human-centered. So you might find yourself moving into moments of almost AI resistance. You might say no computers at all during this. You're toggling back and forth in this AI integrated approach. Next, as students outline, you might require students to write an initial outline by hand. It could be on a whiteboard, paper, a Google Doc. They might organize their thinking with sticky notes on a whiteboard. And afterwards, you have the chatbot create an outline as well, and students can then compare and contrast the two outlines and ultimately make modifications on their own outline, right? So now they're not falling into cognitive atrophy because it's human first. As they begin drafting, you might have a rule that you say everything has to be written by you, and then you can use AI for editing. But you also might say, you know, for this section of your work, it can be generated by AI, And then you need to show me how you modify what it creates to have more of your voice, to have more of your style, to have more of your ideas. And that might seem a little off, that might seem a little different, but I want to remind you, students kind of do that when they look at exemplars. Like, this is something that many of them are already doing. It's just that now they have the text in front of them and they're modifying it in the moment to make it their own. And again, that modification process could be color-coded, or you could look at their Google Docs history and see what exactly they've changed in their revision process. And then in the revision process, you might do something like a 20-minute peer review process, checklists back and forth. But they might run a simulated feedback with multiple avatars where fictional readers are giving them feedback. They might use a tool like Grammarly to get feedback on their grammar and syntax and style and things like that. And so in the end, what we're really doing is we're integrating AI in a way where our focus is to avoid that cognitive debt or that cognitive atrophy. Ultimately, we can also move into AI-driven. At this level, the AI-driven approach is that the AI is creating nearly every aspect of the writing, brainstorming, outlines, full essays, things like that. And I think it's important to recognize, like, this AI-driven approach is probably one that we don't want to use. But there might be some moments where you do. You're saving time, you're creating a video, you want it to create an initial script based on your outline, and then you modify it a little bit. The key thing is, if it is AI-driven, we ultimately, in this model, want to be very cognizant of all of the dangers mentioned in the MIT article. So for me, personally, I'll just say, as I think about this continuum and these four different models of using AI, I think there's times where I'm going to be and continue to be AI resistant. I think there's times where I am using AI to assist me in assisting students. So I use that AI assisted approach to design scaffolds and supports. But I am really being intentional in my courses of using an AI integrated approach in a way that prevents cognitive atrophy. In the end, we don't know how AI is going to transform learning. We're still new in it. And so many schools are looking for a singular policy for AI in writing, but it's not that simple. AI usage is inherently contextual, and it is complex. But that's precisely what our students need. Our learning outcomes should drive the use of AI. We begin with our goals and standards, then we choose the AI usage that is most appropriate to those goals, to those standards, to those learning targets. And that's where you as a teacher have the upper hand. You know your learners. Gosh, you know your students. Let's not call them learners. You know your students. You know your context. And you know the purpose of each lesson you teach. And for that reason, I think ultimately it will come down to your inherent wisdom as an educator in terms of how we choose to integrate AI into the writing process. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any of those places where you get your podcast? Also, again, please sign up for my newsletter. Check out my website, spencereducation.com. That would be awesome. Tell a friend about this podcast if they've never heard it. If you enjoy it, that would be awesome. Leave a review if you haven't done that. Comment, anything like that. But mostly, I just want to say thank you for your time. I know this was a deep dive podcast and your time is limited, so I really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.